Okay, my friends, probably we're going to start. Good morning to everyone. Thank you. The topics that will be covered are as follows. Averages of Grassmann variables with Gaussian weight and Weak's theorem. Then I will talk about coherent states for fermions. And finally, we'll derive the path integral for many-body partition function. So last time we stopped at the place where we computed Gaussian integral involving Grassmann variables. So this integral, I decided not to write it once again, is equal to the determinant of Hermitian matrix A that stands in the numerator times the exponent involving this combination. So Bi star and Bi are totally independent Grassmann variables, and we obtained this value for the integral. So why did we do this? Because we're interested in the following averages that involve Grassmann variables. So we're interested in the following combinations. So eta k1 multi-dot, eta km, eta bar, say lm multi-dot, eta bar l1. So these are completely independent Grassmann variables, and we can have in total 2m of them. And m variables that don't have bars, and m variables that have bars. And the average is defined as follows. 1 over determinant A integral over the whole set of a bar and, sorry, eta bar and eta, eta k1 multi dot eta km, eta bar lm, eta bar l1, times exponent of minus eta bar I, aij, eta j. Okay, here I use the simple notation that d of eta bar comma eta, that is in brackets, in simple brackets, it is the product of I equal to 1 to all Grassmann variables n, d eta I bar, d eta I. So this is the notation that is commonly used, and I will be using this notation during the whole lecture. So this product of differentials and d eta I bar stands before d eta I. So we're interested in computing those averages. So if we recall the form of this integral J, then we will immediately see that those Grassmann variables, Bi and Bi star, act as sources, And to compute this average, we have to differentiate over those variables Bi and Bi star necessary number of times. So we can write.
How does the left hand side of this equation depend on A? The left hand side.
Well, we simply divide by determinants to determinants of A to cancel this.
Is the average on which weight A?
Yeah, yeah. This one, this is just the definition of the average. Yeah, with the weight of A. This is the weight.
I see. Okay.
This is the weight. It's similar to the ordinary Gaussian integration, so but only we have here Hermitian matrix A.
There's no A on the left hand side.
Right. No. Is this the definition of the average? We can always consider this integral involving many Grassmann variables. Okay. So we have the following. So the average, eta k1 multi dot eta km, eta bar lm, eta bar l1. We can write this as follows: d over d b k1 star multi dot d b star km, then d over d b lm multi dot d over d b l1 of this construction. J A over B star B. And when we differentiate what stands here, we must at the end put all values of B and B star equal to 0. This is because if you recall the form of the Gaussian integral we considered tomorrow, then B's act as sources. So let's calculate this average when we have just two Grassmann variables, one from the set eta and one from the set eta bar. Okay, so let me take the other chalk. Okay, I probably have some space here. So let's compute eta k eta l bar equal to d over d b k star b over d b l of this exponent. B I star A I J minus one B J. So, yeah. It cancels. It cancels. Yeah. It just cancels. The determinant is a scalar variable. So we deliberately divide it by determinant of A. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Here in the definition of the average, we already canceled it. So, here, the line above. Yeah, right. That's true. Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Here it must be, yeah, 1 over that A, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the determinant of A plays the role of normalization factor, and we should just, when defining the average, take care that it simply cancels. Yes, exactly. Yes. Thank you. So what we do here, we differentiate with respect to BL. So we're interested in the term when J is equal to L. But because BJ stands to the right, we must anti-commute it with this BI star. That's why it is important that we have minus sign here. So we have d over d bk star b B I star A I. So J is equal to L minus 1 and this exponent. And after that, I will put a smalter dot. After doing all the differentiation, we must set all b's equal to 0. So, good. Now, we see that we have some factor of bi star here standing before the exponent. And since afterwards we must set all b's equal to 0, this derivative must act only on this factor. So it will act, of course, on the exponent, but it will generate further factors. And when we set b going to 0, those factors will become 0. So all we have to have is that this k is equal to this I. And we have that it is equal to simply a I. So a, sorry, k l minus 1. It is quite simple. It is quite simple. What matters is the order in which eta k and eta l bar stand. So eta k precedes eta l bar. Of course, we can calculate the average of eta l bar eta k. In this case, we just have additional minus sign before. Order in which Grassmann variables stand matters. Okay, now let's compute more complicated average that will involve four Grassmann variables. Down the road, I will mention that barred and non-barred Grassmann variables must appear in averages in pairs. So, for example, this average is always equal to 0, and the average of the kind eta I, eta k, eta l bar, for example, is also always equal to 0. So we must have some finite number m of barred Grassmann variables and m non-barred Grassmann variables. Only in this case, we'll get the non-zero result. So let's compute something more complicated. The average of four Grassmann variables, and you will see how we can recover Wick's theorem based on this example. Let's compute eta a, let's denote it this way, eta b, eta bar c, eta bar d. So again, we will have many derivatives. D over b a star, d over d b b star, d over d b c, d over d d d of this exponent. I will denote it by multi dots, and after taking the derivatives, we will put everything, all b's equal to 0. So I will denote them as multi dot as well. Now we're going to have, first we differentiate with respect to bd. We're going to recover d over b a star, d over d b b star, d over d bc. So what stands here is, I will denote this way, bm star a minus 1 md with sum over index m, is just the index of summation. This exponent and we keep in mind that afterwards we set all this equal to 0. Okay, we still have d over dbc, right? And it doesn't act on this because we have the start variable here. So we continue equal to d over db a star, d over db b star, and we have here the following. So so we have minus B M star A M D minus one B L star A L C minus one exponent and at the very end we set things equal to zero. Oh, okay, why do we have additional minus here? Because we have to drag this derivative through this one Grassmann variable. And this generates additional minus sign. Okay, so we should be very careful. Now we have two derivatives involving the start bis. They can act only on this pair. So they can no longer act on the exponent because if something will be generated as a result, will turn to zero at the very end. So now let's do those. So B can be equal either to M or to L. So if B is equal to L, then we drag this derivative through these Grassmann variables, and instead of L, we will have here B, we will have A minus one B C, and then on the last step, we'll have A is equal to M, and we will have AAD in power minus one. Okay, very good. So, but if B is equal to M, then we will have ABD minus one, and minus sign remains minus A. B D minus one, and here A minus one, A so yeah B D A C. So good, and this can be written as. Eta A, eta C bar average. Eta A, eta D. Bar average minus eta B eta D average eta A eta C average. So we started from this average when we have for Grassmann variables and could break it into sum of products of the averages of just two pairs. So this is nothing else then Wick's theorem. What we do, we form all possible pairs of barred and unbarred Grassmann variables. And depending on how many permutations we have to make, we should enter either plus sign or minus sign. So if we choose the pair involving A and C, then we have to drag this A to C bar to the closest possible place so that it could stand next to eta A, and we have to make one permutation. This will generate just one minus sign. And we recover this term. If we pair eta A with eta D bar, then we have to drag this eta D bar through two Grassmann variables. This will give plus sign, and we recover this first term. Yeah, questions?
The very first index in the last time,
the very first. Here. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Exactly. So it is C. And 1 second. So yeah, let me just check. A with D, yeah, it should be B. And so BC, AD minus BD, yeah, AC. Right, yeah, thank you. So this week's theorem is generalizable for the case of many Grassmann barrels. So all we need to do is to construct all possible pairs that involve one barred Grassmann variables and one Grassmann variables that does not contain bar. Okay, that's pretty much all related to mathematics of Grassmann variables. What we're going to consider next, we're going to construct coherent states for fermions. These states are constructed pretty much in the way similar to how they're constructed for bosons. So coherent states. Fermions. So suppose we have the set of fermion operators that anti-commute, AI, AJ dagger, their anti-commutator is equal to delta IJ. And we have that all AI commute with all AJ, sorry, anti-commute. This is anti-commutator, equal to zero. So we have the set of fermion operators, and we have some kind of a set of Grassmann variables. So set of eta I, where eta I, Grassmann variables. Before writing down the formulas for coherent states, I will make a comment that we allow operators AI to anti-commute with Grassmann variables eta I. Basically, we enlarge the algebra of Grassmann variables to include fermion operators. So we impose the condition that eta I anti-commutes with AJ. So the anti-commutator is equal to zero. So AI are operators, eta I are Grassmann variables, but nevertheless, we have them to anti-commute. This is quite an important condition. So definition. Coherent state eta that involves the set of all operators eta AI and all Grassmann variables eta I is defined as follows. Exponent minus sum over I eta I AI acting on vacuum. Minus here is important. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And Bra vector is defined as follows. So this was sket vector. It includes a I dagger, and bra vector will be defined as vacuum exponent minus sum over I a I eta bar I. Where, and this is very important, where the set of eta bar I is independent of the set that includes all eta I. So barred and unbarred variables eta I are completely independent of each other. They are not complex conjugate like we had for boson coherent states. You don't find one from the other. You just take another set formally of Grassmann variables and define bra vector this way. They are completely independent. For boson coherent state, they were complex conjugates. But here they are just independent Grassmann variables. I will explain. Yeah, I will explain. Okay, now let me enumerate the properties. Properties. So first, AI acting on coherent state must give something, some kind of non-operator. And in this case, it gives us eta I, eta. Two, when eta I dagger acts on the left, acts on bra eta, then it gives bra eta, eta I bar. Property three, AI dagger acting on eta is equal to, and this time minus D over D eta I eta. So I believe you will have a tutorial on QFT2. Probably next week, and there will be the exercise that will be devoted to proof of those properties. Eta and eta bar, they are not complex conjugates. They're independent Grassmann variables. They're completely unrelated to each other. Yes, yes, this is just the definition. They're completely unrelated. So let's now consider the overlap, property four. So if we have two Fermionic coherent states, then their overlap is going to be equal to sum over I psi I bar eta I. So if you take an overlap of bra eta with ket eta, you will get that this is the sum exponent sum over I eta I bar eta I. So this is the overlap. It contains the product of eta I bar and eta I. These are just bilinears with respect to Grassmann variables and should be viewed formally when you expand the exponent. Yeah. So it is not one. It And so why should this be some kind of the number? So for the bosonic coherent state, we also had this exponent, and this was not the number. This was the reason why coherent states for bosons were overcomplete. The same thing is for fermions. Mm-hmm. Well, so since we have pairs, then it's just like some kind of a scalar.
Yeah, but
like this
exponential,
right? Yeah. 1 plus this. But they're not normalized. Remember, coherent states for bosons were not normalized. Yeah, this is the choice. That's why the set of those variables is overcomplete rather than complete. So for bosons, they were not normalized as well. So then finally, let me just continue. Finally, the property of completeness, or better to say, overcompleteness, that is similar to the property we had for bosons. It states that integral here, product of di bar di eta I bar di eta I exponent, this exponent taken with the minus sign, minus eta I bar eta I, sum of those. And ket bra, ket of eta, then bra of eta equal to identity operator.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot ascribe numbers to Grassmann variables. So similarly, you can't ascribe numbers to their pairs.
But they are not Grassmann variables as well. They are then neither Grassmann variable or.
Yes, it is something like that. Yeah, so something like that. So from one side, pairs of Grassmann variables, they commute with everything. Yeah. They commute, but from the other side, they are not numbers. So you are probably right. Neither this nor that. So what is the difference compared to the case of bosons? The absence of pi in denominator. This is because this integral d eta bar d eta e power minus eta bar eta is equal to 1 and does not contain any pi's. So let me, yeah. So for the case of bosons, you take the complex conjugates. But for the case of fermions, you don't do this. You imagine that there is another set of Grassmann variables, completely independent. So I have one set. Then I imagine that there is an independent set. And construct? Ket. Oi, bra. So if you have ket, you have the set of Grassmann variables. Then if you want to construct bra, you imagine that there is another set of independent Grassmann variables, and you construct ket.
So where does the problem come from? Is it because it's not obvious how to define a complex structure in Grassmann variables?
Yes. It's not obvious. Apparently, complex conjugation is not defined for Grassmann variables. So this is the problem. So this is just a bit to view this as a set of rules, how to define and how to manipulate. So it requires some practice, but fortunately, towards the end of this lecture, you will realize that this machinery was only helpful to construct the path integral for fermionic systems. Yeah. So let me state one more theorem and prove it. I will better call it property six. So theorem. If N is some N particle state in Fock space, and eta is a coherent state, then we have the following property. Then the overlap of N with eta times the overlap of eta with N is equal to minus overlap of eta with N times overlap of N with eta. So this theorem is valid only for fermionic coherent states, but not for bosonic. For bosons, we obviously have plus here. Yeah. No, it's fermionic. Yeah, it's fermionic. It's some N particle fermionic state. So there are some states, and we apply a Dagger operators to fill some of those states so that this state is N particle. So it's not bosonic. It is fermionic. So to prove it, we just write. Eta is a fermionic coherent state. So some arbitrary fermionic coherent state. So N is an arbitrary state in Fock space. Okay, the Fock space is a fermionic. And eta is an arbitrary coherent state. So this is what we have here. So I decided to give the proof of this theorem. I didn't decide to give the proof of all those properties to save time. But this theorem is very interesting. And I will provide the proof. So proof. So what is N? N can be represented as a product of operators. A1 dagger, multi-dots, AN dagger acting on vacuum. So each operator acts only once. So this state is also state for fermions. So this is the definition. When we write the overlap of N with eta, we can write. So we construct the bra corresponding to this N. It will look like this, AN, multi-dots, A1, and coherent state eta here. So now all those annihilation operators act on the right coherent state, and we have 0 eta N, multi-dots, eta 1, eta. And these are just Grassmann numbers. And we can write eta N, multi-dots, eta 1, 0, overlap of 0 with eta. And this is 1. Is this clear why? When, why the overlap of vacuum with coherent state eta is equal to 1. Yeah, you expand the exponential. Yeah, yeah, right. And everything that contains in this exponential any creation operator, due to the fact that it gives rise to an extra particle, will give zero overlap. So, good. Now, similarly, we can show that similarly, we can show that overlap of bra eta n is equal to the product of eta 1 bar, eta n bar. Right. This is a completely identical proof. So as a result, we write that n overlapping with eta times eta overlapping with n equal to the product of eta n multi dots eta 1 times eta, better write this multi dots, eta 2 eta 1 times eta 1 bar eta 2 multi dots eta n. Good, good. Now, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Good. Now we do the following. We see that we have pairs of eta 1 bar, eta 2 bar. What we do, we take this whole pair and drag it to the left for all operators. Pairs commute with everything, right? Pairs commute. Then after dragging it to the left, we look at the pair eta 2 bar and do the same. Also commuted to the left so that it could stand next to the pair eta 1 bar. And proceeding this way, we get eta 1 bar times eta 2 bar multi dot eta n bar. Good. Then what we do next, we anti-commute Grassmann variables in each pair. And we get minus eta 1 bar eta 1 times minus eta 2 bar eta 2 multi-dot minus eta n bar eta n. So, and after this, we do the exactly inverse procedure, trying to recover this form, albeit with the relevant minus sign. So we have minus eta 1 bar minus eta 2 bar multi dots minus eta n bar. And here eta n multi dots eta 2 eta 1. But the last thing is nothing else than the overlap of minus eta. So I wrote this formula with the minus sign here, but I could, of course, equally put minus under the notation of bra. Minus eta n times n overlap of n with eta.
Yeah, if
here.
If there are even number of particles, wouldn't all those minus signs?
Well, we don't care about the number of particles. For your formula, of course, yeah.
No, but I'm saying a real number should commute with the Grassmann variable, so I should equally be able to pull out all those minus signs, and if there's an even number of them.
Nice. Yeah, my minus one to the end. But what is essentially is that. Okay, good, very very good. So it's better to have yeah. Minus eta here. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Thank you. That's important. Yeah. That's important. And this will be important when we consider path integral. So since we have some time, let's do the following. Let's create a table. A table that summarizes all the properties simultaneously for boson coherent states and fermion coherent states. So let me use one word and try to write in smaller letters. So we label coherent states by single letter phi and introduce variable zeta equal to 1 for bosons and minus 1 for fermions. Good. And also introduce the definition that is quite similar to what we had there, D of this bracket, eta bar, comma eta. So here we will define D of theta bar. So sorry, psi. Yeah, psi. Psi bar psi equal to this product. I d psi I bar d psi I divided by pi in power 1 plus zeta divided by 2. So if zeta is equal to 1, we have pi in the denominator. If zeta is equal to minus 1 for fermions, we don't have this pi. These are just the notational definitions. So one, definitions, def, double dot, definitions of coherent states. We have ket psi equal to exponent of zeta times the sum of over I phi I at a I dagger acting on vacuum. So zeta is equal to minus 1 e, and we recover the definition for fermion coherent states. When zeta is equal plus 1, we recover the definition for bosonic coherent states. Then bra psi equal to vacuum and exponent of zeta sum I a I psi I bar. Right. Again, we should remember that for the case of bosons, psi I bar is the complex conjugate of psi I. And for the case of fermions, these are Grassmann variables that are completely independent. This is what we should simply keep in mind. Two. Action of AI, double dot. So AI acting on psi always gives us psi I, psi, and AI acting on the left, so acting on the left, and we have bra psi here, equal to, D over d phi I of bra psi. Sorry, d over d psi I bra psi. Good. Property three, action of AI dagger. AI dagger acting on psi coherent state gives us zeta d over d psi I acting on ket psi, comma. And if AI dagger acts on bra psi, then it gives us bra psi times bar psi I. Good. This is just for us to remember when in a few minutes we'll construct path integrals. Mm-hmm. This is what we should remember. We should remember very, very good that that variables for bosonic case, they are just numbers and they commute with all creation and annihilation operator for bosons. Here, Grassmann variables anti-commute with creation operator. I'm just reiterating all the results I wrote down before. In deriving these results for fermionic coherent states, you have to use this extensively. Well, this is to be consistent with all science. So what we have that Grassmann variables anti-commute, then creation operators anti-commute, and annihilation operators anti-commute. So to be consistent, we have to use this property. But we didn't show, but we should just keep in mind. Yeah, I decided not to write this down, but we should keep in mind the thing that psi bar and psi are completely independent for the case of fermions. And second, we should keep in mind this condition. Well, it is not shown here, but it is used when we try to prove all these properties for fermions. Then property four, overlap. If we have two different coherent states, say psi prime and psi, and then their overlap is equal to exponent sum over I, psi I bar times psi I. Zeta is not present here because here we have always plus. And the property of completeness. This construction that you should start being accustomed to, d psi bar comma psi exponent minus sum over I psi I bar psi I ket psi bra psi equal to identity operator. Property five, and finally property six. Albeit this property is given in your textbook as an exercise. Mm-hmm. Here. Yeah. And property six, namely that n overlapping with psi times psi overlapping with n equal to zeta of psi overlapping with n times n overlapping with psi. So for the case of bosons, n is the Fock state that contains bosons. For the case of fermions, like we proved here, n is the Fock state that contains fermions. So for the case of bosons, zeta equal to 1, and this is completely obvious. For the case of fermions, we have just proven it. OK, let's take several seconds break. because now, any questions at this point, please ask. Wait. They still anti-commute. Yeah, here I and j can be arbitrary, right? That they're still anti-commuting, right? Right, here there is no delta, no. There is no reasons, very, very good. So you're asking whether this, no. There is no reasons for us to do this because AI act on vacuum. But eta I, they don't act on anything. So this is still zero. So when we introduce all those definitions, when we introduce the definitions of coherent state, we have to impose this condition to prove all the properties. Also, all Grassmann variables commute with all creation and annihilation operators. So you should keep in mind that operators act on vacuum, act on some states, but Grassmann variables don't act on anything. But nevertheless, we need this condition. Yeah. Just say it again. Yeah. This is pi in power 1 plus zeta divided by 2. So if zeta is minus 1, then pi in power 0 simply gives you 1. It disappears. So the measure is different for bosonic and fermionic cases, but it's good to take care of it from the very beginning before we proceed towards construction of path integral. So, yeah. Okay, if there are no more questions, then we have come up to an exciting moment. We're constructing path integral. So, but let me just tell you about the Hamiltonian where typically work in condensed matter, or the Hamiltonians that people typically consider in condensed matter. So, good, our task now, let me go to the third topic, path integral for many body partition function. Our basic need to compute this object Z equal to the trace over all states of the following object of the density matrix E in power beta H minus mu. This is the grand canonical distribution, as you know from the course of statistical mechanics. So we can write this in the following form. If N is a complete set of states in Fock space, then we write N times the in power beta H minus mu N acting on cat N. Mu is the chemical potential, N is the total number of particles, and H is the Hamiltonian. So it is absolutely customary in condensed matter to use grand canonical distribution. No, not simply canonical, but grand canonical, because for condensed matter systems, quite often we have a number of particles that is not constant. So beta is 1 over kBT. So I will set the Boltzmann constant equal to 1, so beta will be just 1 over T. Also, it is quite common to set both Boltzmann constant and Planck's constant equal to 1 in condensed matter. So, and I will be doing this. Yeah. Yes. Yes, for example, for photons, phonons, magnons, yes. So mu is just a Lagrange multiplier that is determined at the last step, given the total number of particles. If it is conserved, then there will be equation. We will consider this this situation tomorrow. If it is not conserved due to the nature of quasi-particles, like for magnons, phonons, photons, then we'll set it zero. But we will have it in this form. Question, very, very good question. What types of Hamiltonians we are going to use? So during the previous lectures, Alek apparently did not write any Hamiltonian. No, he wrote for phonons, yes. But you can also have Hamiltonian that describe interacting spins. So then the Hamiltonians that describe interactions between different types of quasi-particles. So let me write down the general form of the Hamiltonian. H, just formally as a function of all creation and annihilation operators, equal to, written in this form, Hij, Ai dagger Aj, plus sum over some indices. I will just explain in a moment. I, J, K, L, A, I, dagger, A, J, A, K, here dagger, A, I, dagger, A, J, dagger, A, K, A, L. So we have many states. And what these operators do, they create and annihilate the particles in those states. Those operators can be both bosonic and fermionic, both. But what is essential here is that this Hamiltonian is normal ordered, meaning that all creation operators stand to the left of all annihilation operators. That this is essential to construct our partition function. Then this part somehow plays the role of kinetic term. Just of kinetic energy. And this part, actually here, you have VIJKL, where this plays the role of interaction. So this part plays the role of interactions. In a minute, I will tell you why. Okay, this is the most general form. The most general form. So let me just briefly mention, since this was not mentioned essentially before, what types of Hamiltonians are of interest to us. Examples. Examples of Hamiltonians. First, interacting both Fermi gas or gas of interacting bosons and fermions. I decided to write this way, hopefully it won't lead to any confusion. Interacting both Fermi gas in free space. We can write H minus mu n equal to the integral over whole space A sigma dagger as a function of R minus H bar squared nabla squared divided by 2m minus mu a sigma at r and interaction term 1/2 dr prime of n sigma r u sigma prime r minus r prime n sigma r prime, where n sigma r is the density operator equal to a sigma dagger at r, a sigma at r. So what does the operator a sigma r do? So a sigma dagger creates a particle at point r, a with spin sigma, a sigma r annihilate a particle with spin sigma at point r. And this describes interaction. Interaction depends, and this is quite natural, on the distance between particles. And this term involves densities. Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely true. So in general, interaction can be spin dependent. And we can have gases, interacting gases of bosons and fermions. Bosonic particles have zero spin. Fermionic particles have zero and integer spin. And fermionic particles have half integer spin. And now there are experiments on cold gases where all those Hamiltonians lead to properties that can be tested experimentally. So people construct now systems with half integer spins, with integer spins of non-zero value, because we know that spin of photon is zero, spin of phonon is zero, right? So, but now one can have gases with bosons that have quite high spins. So, and one can study the properties depending of which interaction you choose. So this Hamiltonian is quite often, is typically written when one introduces the Fourier transforms. So in introducing a sigma at r equal to 1 over square root of v, sigma sum over k, a sigma of k, e in power I k r, and also Fourier transforming potential sigma prime of r equal to 1 over v. It's more convenient to have here 1 over square root of v, but here 1 over v. Q e in power I q r. One can rewrite the above written Hamiltonian in the following form. So h minus mu n equal to sigma over k and sum over k and sigma. Here epsilon k minus mu c. I will write, I actually not c, oh, I have a dagger sigma k a sigma of k. And here I have interaction 1 over 2v. Sum over k, moment k, p q, u of, let me write this way, a sigma dagger k, a sigma, yes, sigma prime No. No, I still have, I didn't anti-commute. I still have the density. So I should write A sigma k plus q u sigma sigma prime of q A sigma prime of p and A sigma prime, dagger, and A sigma prime of p minus q. Yeah, here k plus q, but here p minus q. So it's still not normally ordered, but you can easily anti-commute these two operators. And what will it give you? It will give you some term that renormalizes chemical potential. So the fact that this interaction is not normally ordered should not bother you, because any normal ordering typically results in some other value of chemical potentials. But what is chemical potential? Chemical potential is some Lagrange multiplier that is determined cell consistency at the very end. So we can, at this point, it's just a letter. Now, the argument is that when you anti-commute, you will have some delta function, and also delta function with respect to sigma and sigma prime. So you will have something that can be absorbed in this term. Check this as an exercise. Yes. And U is interaction. U is interaction. Yeah. V is volume, right? V is volume, right? So you may wonder why we have 1/2 here. We have 1/2 here because to avoid double counting when we integrate over whole space, dr and dr prime. Mm-hmm. U is the potential interaction between the particles. Huh? It's just a scalar function. It's just a number, exactly. It's just a number. So I don't put hats over operators simply to save time. But in books on quantum mechanics, quite often operators are labeled with hats. So yeah, thank you. Two, example two, Hubbard Hamiltonian on the lattice. So H minus mu n is equal to sum over pairs of sides. This denotes a pair of sides, pairs of sides, Tij, Ai, and spin sigma, Ai sigma dagger, Aj sigma plus Aj sigma dagger. It's Hermitian conjugate, Ai sigma minus mu times sum over I sigma n I sigma plus u over 2 sum over all sides n I spin up and I spin down. So here sigma is either spin up or spin down, and n I sigma is just AI dagger sigma AI. So here, this Hamiltonian is typically written in real space, in coordinate space rather than in momentum space. AI sigma dagger creates a fermion with spin sigma at site I. And A I sigma annihilates this. This is the term with the chemical potential. Just if you should look closer, you should try to make comparison between this Hamiltonian and the Hamiltonian that describes interacting fermions on the lattice. Now, this term is very important. It describes on-site repulsion. Now, I have just a nice question for you. Could we add, for example, this term, say, u over 2, sum of I, n I, and sigma, n I sigma squared? Could we add this term to our Hamiltonian? Because if you look at this term, it contains numbers for the particles of opposite spins. Can we have this term? Why? Well, by Pauli exclusion principle, but from mathematical point of view, we know that ni sigma is equal, ni sigma squared is equal to ni just sigma. And by adding this, we would again renormalize just this chemical potential. This doesn't add to anything. So those terms are not written, right? Those terms are not written, and all we have is just this term. So I don't have much time to write down pretty much similar Hamiltonian for bosons. It differs from this Hamiltonian by the form of interaction. And for bosons, what one has exactly the same structure. So this is just four fermions. Muons, and for bosons, say for bosons that whose spin is zero, this term is written as like this: sum over I and I times n I minus one. This is in case of bosons. In case of bosons. So I decided to write all this down because some people simply did not saw the Hamiltonians that are typically studied in condensed matter. If you saw this, excellent. But if you never saw, just I felt necessary to remind you of that. Okay, and finally, we are now proceeding to construction of the path integral. And give me just 15 minutes, I will be done in 15 minutes. Yeah. This is how it is written. Typically, it is not necessary because, again, it renormalizes chemical potential, but this is the form. So for bosons, ni squared is of course not equal to ni. But it is written in this form to reflect the fact that when you add extra particle to arbitrary site, it increases its energy. This is a purely local interaction. So, and when there are many particles at any given site, they interact stronger. Okay, guys, I must expedite myself. And if you have any questions after the lecture, I will answer all of them. I will try, of course, to answer. Okay, now we have the expression for partition function. What we do, we insert the resolution of identity. So our z is equal to d. So we have the condition of completeness. So we have the condition of completeness, and we insert it here. e in power minus sum psi I bar psi I sum over n, n overlap between n and psi, then bra psi e, then e in power minus b h minus mu n psi, right? So what we need to do now, we need to get rid of states of our original states in Fock space n, and have our operator sandwiched between coherent state only. So we use the sixth property to get that this can be written as d psi bar psi e in power minus sum over I bar psi I. So here psi a coherent state that can be both fermionic and bosonic, and we have here this construction zeta psi e in power minus beta h minus mu n psi. So let's for the sake of brevity label this as h with tilde. So h minus mu n is h tilde. What we're going to do, we are going now partition our interval from zero to beta. What you do in quantum mechanics, you partition when you construct the path integral for a propagator of the particle, you partition time interval. Here we do a slightly, I would say, more artificial procedure. We partition the interval from zero to beta. Basically, let's imagine that this is zero. Let's imagine some segment. This is zero. I'll write it this way. And this is beta. So we partition this segment into n steps. So this is the first step. This is nth step. And write that the step has length delta equal to beta over n. So, and assume the delta in infinitesimal when n goes to infinity. So in this case, we can write ket zeta phi e in power minus beta h tilde, here phi, equal to this zeta phi. And here we write limit n going to infinity e in power minus delta h tilde in power n psi. This is just the result of our partitioning. There is nothing wrong with this. And we write this as follows. Zeta phi, we expand this exponent up to first order in delta, keeping in mind that delta in infinitesimal. So we will write 1 minus delta h, once again, minus delta h tilde, multidot, the last one, minus 1 minus delta h tilde psi. And this is n times and what we do next, we insert again the resolutions of identities between those objects. Insert it here, insert it here, insert it here. Insert n minus 1 resolution of identities involving coherent states. N minus 1 resolutions of identity. Then, we label this, or better to say, call this state as the state pertaining to the zeroth step. Because this is first, second, third, and so forth. This is n step. And this is zero step. So what stands here will be given the superscript zero. Call this as psi zero. And this is the last nth step. Call this bra psi n. And because we have to take the trace, we impose very important condition. And impose that psi n is equal to zeta psi 0 and psi bar n equal to zeta psi bar 0. Okay, so I am just trying to understand which board to use. I will probably press it here. Actually, I will do the following. I will write last formula and we will continue next time. Because I don't want to lecture to excess and we all need to have lunch. Okay. So as a result, that of all those things, that will have this form, that equal to integral. Here, there will be some product from k equal to n minus 1, k equal from 0 to n minus 1. Why n minus 1? Because we have n minus 1 resolution of identity, and we have also integration that we have just labeled as psi zero. So it is from zero to n minus one. Actually, it's very interesting that three sources I used to prepare this, they have slides that they were quite sloppy about those things. So, because when people write reviews or books related to path integral, they take some things as granted. So, okay, d psi bar k, psi k, and here we have a very long construction, psi n 1 minus delta h tilde, psi n minus 1, e in power. This arises when we inserted the resolution of identity, minus sum over I psi I bar n minus 1 psi I n minus 1. Here psi n minus 1. Again, we have this. Here psi n minus 2. Again, exponent this time e in power minus sum over I psi I bar n minus 2 psi I n minus 2. And I will write this way, psi n minus 2, many, many dots, psi 1. And here I will write e in power minus sum over I of psi bar I 1. This is 1, psi I 1. And finally, the last thing, psi 1, 1 minus delta h tilde with respect to psi 0. And the thing that, comes from there when we labeled the leftmost state as 0, e in power minus sum over I, psi I 0, psi I. I will stop here. What I will do tomorrow, I will first write down on the board this formula, and we'll continue from, this part. So, okay, if you have any questions, just don't hesitate to ask.